You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, I thought we could start off our conversation for the evening by comparing and contrasting the Democratic National Convention and the Democratic platform to the Republican convention so far.
Well, sure. They're starkly different. And
you got a frog in your throat there?
ribbit. They are starkly different for sure. And we are seeing one that was kind of dark and negative in the Democratic convention, and one that really is talking about uplifting America and Americans, which is really, really what I wanted to see and what I think America needs to see, especially in these times right now where we have so many crazy things going wrong with riots and looting and fires and COVID and all of these situations that we have. We need to see something uplifting. And, you know, people know, Ron, that Americans have a great spirit, and they always have had. And we haven't lost that. We're just seeing it outshined right now by the media playing the downsides of things instead of the upsides of things.
I think it's important at this particular phase of the game to compare and contrast what the Democrats present in their platform and what they presented on TV in their convention in comparison to the Republicans, and also what they didn't talk about. So they did talk about some things that we're going to talk about, but I think the huge elephant in the room that was not discussed is what is going on now in the United States with this complete chaos and street revolutionaries taking over some of the bigger cities, and law enforcement being handcuffed and not, you know, really playing a very active role because they're handcuffed, and our streets are burning.
Right. And they are democratically run streets for either all of it or by far the most of it. So that has to tell you something. They completely ignored that at the Democratic convention, which I think was surprising because you're right. It is an elephant in the room. You can't miss it.
Well, you know, what's interesting for me is when they throw out this rhetoric of systemic racism. Okay. So they're talking about systemic racism. Okay. Is there systemic racism in Chicago? Guess who's been in control of Chicago for 80 years? The Democrats. Is there systemic racism in Los Angeles? Again, Democrats in control for 40 or more years. Systemic racism in Philadelphia, in Baltimore? I mean, Detroit?
Portland, Seattle?
Philadelphia? Sure. Mm-hmm. You name it. They're all democratically controlled cities. So then those Democrats that have controlled the cities and managed the cities and led the cities, they have got to be racists, right? Because they allowed systemic racism, because that's what it is. Racism at every single facet of society in those particular areas.
Well, but it's not the type of racism that the media is portraying. It's almost a reverse racism. But either way, it was ignored at the convention. And that doesn't make sense to me because it is such a big issue and it's such an important issue. I'm sure that if you live in any of those cities that we just mentioned and more, it's a big issue. You're losing your businesses. Your businesses are being looted. You're losing your, just everything about your normal day is gone.
And you know, the revolutionaries, the black nationalists, the Marxists, the Black Lives Matter people, the Antifa. I mean, if people in the United States, and I'm talking not only Democrats, but other people, independents, even Republicans, if they think this movement, this burning and looting and shooting is all about black lives, they need to get their head examined. This has never been about black lives, because if it was about black lives, then the BLM and Antifa would be protesting and marching on the leaders of the cities of Chicago and all these other cities that we mentioned that has such out of control gun violence, predominantly in the minority community. You and I have talked so many times about Chicago, and like 95-96% of all the victims and the suspects of gun violence are what? People of color.
Absolutely. And the people of color have not shown that they even want the police defunded or gone. In fact, they would like to have more police protection. And they have been interviewed in these cities time and time again. And I'm talking the citizens of these cities, not these paid protesters and looters who've been brought in to cause chaos in their cities. I'm talking about the people who actually live there. They do not want to lose their police. They do not want their police defunded. So what is being done by the leaders of these cities to go ahead and really kind of kowtow to all those people that are being brought in from the outside is just so despicable and wrong to the people that actually live there.
Right. You know, these are George Soros paid mercenaries. You know, I wrote extensively about the Black Lives Matter movement in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. These are George Soros and celebrity-funded mercenaries. And now it's gone so far beyond what I even wrote about in the book, Linda, because now we got corporations such as, you know, Amazon and Jeff Bezos funding. And I read an article that the Black Lives Matter movement, which is supposed to be a nonprofit, right, has got something like $1 billion nationally or internationally donated to them.
Well, lots of big corporations have donated money to them, corporations that you talk about every day. But I honestly don't think that they understand what they're donating to.
No.
I don't think that they understand that they're donating to a terrorist organization, and that they're donating to an organization that would completely eliminate the ability for these corporations to even exist.
Well, and that's it. And the thing that gets me, and I'm just banging my head all the time about this, okay, about the press, about the media in the United States that completely support Black Lives Matter, Antifa, just by the way that they publicize everything that's going on. It's so one-sided, you know, against the President of the United States, against our republic, against our democratic society, against law enforcement. And what they don't understand is that these people are Marxists and anarchists. And if you go back throughout the history of these types of governments, of these Marxist, communist, national socialist governments, after they took over, the first people they eliminated was the press.
Sure.
Okay, you can't talk the kind of crap that they talk about here in the United States about the government and do the things that they do, tear down American flags and burn them and stamp on them and burn government buildings and, you know, just the tremendous amount of destruction against police buildings, government buildings. And if it was in Russia, if it was in North Korea, if it was in Cuba, if it was in China, if it was in Venezuela, these people would be, first of all, if they didn't just disappear or stuck in a gulag someplace, they would be lined up against a wall in a public execution and just machine gunned. I don't think these people understand it.
Well, in the differences that I noted in the Democratic and the Republican conventions, one of the big things that stood out to me was, you know, first of all, the tone and kind of the more uplifting message, because the Democratic convention was all about bashing President Trump. But the Republican convention has been more about, you know, kind of dispelling some of the lies that have been told. And here's one of them that stood out to me. Herschel Walker was absolutely amazing in his speech. I just think he was so well spoken.
I thought he gave one of the best speeches.
He really did. And he said, which I did not know, that he was a friend of President Trump, a personal friend of his for over 30 years, and that they spend time together. But he made clear to people that President Trump is no racist, and he continues to be called a racist by the Democratic Party, which I just find so insulting. And here's a black man who's saying, no, he's nothing of the sort. And the other person that I really enjoyed listening to was Tim Scott. And the reason was because he just made so much sense. And he talked
about, who is a black man.
Yes. And he talked about his life, his early life, and how he came up to be where he is today. And it was no easy road, Ron. I mean, he had, you know, a little bit of a hard life, and he made mistakes, and he went on, and he learned from those mistakes, and he learned that he was better than he gave himself credit for, and he, you know, became very successful. He is so well-spoken. I would not be surprised if he's president of the United States someday. But those two people really stood out to me. There are so many memorable people, and we'll talk more about them, but those two have really stood out to me in what they have to say. And the other thing that I want to say about the convention just is that what it brings to my mind is that there just really are a lot of misconceptions that are said. You know, so when they said on the Democratic side, when they said that President Trump killed people, Kamala Harris says that people died because of President Trump with COVID. I just find that very offensive, because they were the ones who were saying that he was a xenophobe for trying to stop flights coming in from China. And they don't bring any of that up.
You know, this, when you get people going off the deep end like this and just spouting these outright lies, there's no substance to it whatsoever. I mean, if you want to call, you know, following that theme, if you wanted to call somebody a murderer, you would call Andrew Cuomo a murderer, for God's sakes, for all the thousands of infirmed senior citizens.
That was his decision to do that. And he blames President Trump for that, which is so dishonest. And what they count on, Ron, what they always count on, is an uninformed public.
Correct. And the whole Nancy Pelosi type of plan, where if you keep saying it again and again, yes, and the media picks it up, then they validate what you said, so it must be true. You know, that whole theme, to me, these are people speaking on behalf of a desperate political party. Now, in comparing and contrasting the speakers in the Democrat National Convention with the Republicans and the speakers that we've heard so far, and rather than being depressed, or, you know, the Republicans are talking about where America needs to be moving into the future, talking about the successes of the Trump administration, talking about trade, talking about the economy, talking about the stock market, talking about things that matter to Americans, their security, their safety, talking about the respect and appreciation for law enforcement and the place of law enforcement as protectors of the rule of law in our democracy, which currently is kind of burning to the ground. All right. And talking about where America needs to go and where Americans need to go to keep America great again.
Absolutely. It's like I say, it's an uplifting message. And I think that they need to focus, and they have been focusing on all of the things that Trump has done for the country. You know, we've had just the greatest economy that we've had in just a lot of years in our country, and then COVID came. Was that President Trump's fault? No, that was China's fault. And the desire to blame President Trump for people's deaths is just wrong. And I hope that people don't buy into that. And if they need a scapegoat for that, then that's what they're going to do. But President Trump has done everything that one man can do amidst a virus that is taking over the entire globe that nobody has an answer for. Nobody has a solution for.
Yeah, we're all on the learning curve here. And it's so unfair to blame President Trump for this COVID disaster when we're all on the learning curve here. And, you know, Joe Biden has been so critical about the President of the United States and his response to COVID. But when he was asked, you know, what are six things that you would do to make this different? Okay, to change America so we don't have COVID anymore. Every single thing that he said was already something that President Trump has been doing and is fully engaged in with his medical teams, fully engaged. And that's what happens when you live down in your basement
and
you have no idea what's going on. You know, I was surprised that Biden got through that entire speech without flubbing it up. But of course, don't forget that's a tape speech. And so, you know, they could have done some nice editing, flawless editing. But, you know, even so, he doesn't have the ideas, and he never has had the ideas because he's been in Washington for 47 years, and he is part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Oh, absolutely. And all of the things that he is blaming President Trump for, I just kept thinking in my mind, why didn't you do anything to fix that when you
exactly.
were in office? Why didn't you fix that? Why didn't you address that?
Exactly.
What did you do about that? And all of the answers were just blank because they did nothing. Well, I want to continue that thought right after we have some coffee.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice. It looks like the newest officer involved controversy appears to be the officer involved shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and they were right out rioting and burning car dealerships. And, you know, the difference I think that I see a little bit is that I believe that Wisconsin called out their National Guard right away to handle some of this criminal activity. And the other places, Seattle and Portland, who've been going on for over 40 days, have not done that.
Well, I think they actually took a little bit more time than I would have expected them to call out the National Guard, because it's not as if you don't see it coming based on everything else that we've seen. But, you know, I was recently on One American News, and I was asked to provide some initial analysis on this Jacob Blake shooting. And, you know, Linda, what I always tell people to do is to have a forensic response instead of an emotional one to these cases. And, you know, as I've written about time and time again, we have to take a look at all the facts and not prejudge, not show bias, not prejudge, and not throw officers under the bus like the Wisconsin governor did, and like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did right after this, without knowing anything about the case. And there's a few things that people do need to know about this case. Now, you know me, I take cases of all sides, prosecuting officers for homicide and lower level crimes, and also defending officers in criminal cases.
especially officer-involved shootings, and I do plaintiff work and court appointments and everything, and my advocacy is for forensic facts and evidence, and I never get emotionally involved, and I never, my advocacy is never for people or entities, it's always for forensic facts, and people have to understand a little bit about the law, and whether it's criminal law or civil law, on how people look at officer-involved shootings. And the first thing that people need to keep in mind is, what do officers know or do not know about the individual that they're encountering? And in this particular case, I think we're going to find out that they knew a little bit about Mr. Blake, and the law enforcement agency, which is Kenosha, Wisconsin, had a number of prior contacts with Mr. Blake. And he's got a criminal history. This guy is far from an angel, and we may find out later that he is a questionable victim. So what do we know about Mr. Blake? Well, we know that he's got a significant criminal history that includes resisting arrest, assault on a police officer, felony assault on a police officer, domestic violence, sexual assault, and brandishing a gun. He's got prior weapons crimes where he brandished a gun at two women in a bar. And what the officers, I believe, did know at the time when they're responding out to what? A domestic violence call involving Mr. Blake, is that he had a felony warrant out for his arrest for sexual assault in the third degree, trespassing and disorderly conduct with domestic violence. And that was just a month ago. So this is the person that they're encountering. And then people have to look at the behavior. Now, so far, the police have not advised us of whether these officers were wearing body-worn cameras, what we call BWCs. My understanding is they may not have been wearing body-worn cameras, which is not unusual, but it's beginning to be more expected by the public.
Correct. Yeah, it is.
You know, and I agree. But in the two videos that I saw, he's definitely physically resisting the police during the detention. They're attempting to arrest him. He's not going for it. And he is violently resisting. And they move him around the car. And while I watch the videos, you know, I have the ability to enhance the videos and to single out frames of a video. And I saw him twice go into his waistband, which is, as you know, having been in law enforcement, a very suspicious, furtive, and threatening and dangerous movement. He went in first with his left hand on the left side of his waistband and appears to have something in his hand. And he went around the car to the driver's side and accessed his waistband from the right, with the right hand into the waistband. And then he starts to get in the car. The officer, which ended up being the primary shooting officer, I don't know if both officers in fact fired on him, but certainly I could see that the primary officer, who was grabbing him with his support hand, his left hand, is trying to grab him and keep him from getting inside of that car. But the thing that I found that was very interesting, and I reported it on One America News, is that when he got into the car, he appeared to like dive to the lower floorboard.
I saw that, yes.
Okay, which is consistent with where you and I know that suspects often access guns.
Sure.
And so, you know, part of what the public doesn't understand is that 25% of officers historically get killed in domestic violence calls. They get shot and killed. And another 25%, so now we're up to 50% of officers that get shot and killed every single year historically, get killed in vehicle-related incidents. This is both of those things. So all I'm saying, and you know me, I'm not going to make a determination until all the facts are in, but I would just ask people to just sit back for a moment and let the investigation take place. Let's have a forensic response for once in our lives instead of an emotional response, and let's see where it goes.
No, I totally agree, and it's that way anymore in every case, because it doesn't matter. It only matters now, at this point in time, if police shoot a person of color. That is what they are using in the whole BLM, Antifa movements. This is what they're using to incite people, incite riots, incite chaos in our country, defund the police, and all of the things that are happening. So I totally agree. I've always said it, that we need to wait until the investigation is done, because what people see on television is a very small snippet of everything that happens. And sometimes they're even manipulated. So they need to have a studied response, as you said, and they need to just wait till the facts are in. They may not like the facts ever, right, but facts are facts.
No, you know, you're right, Linda. And there has been at least some preliminary information that he was in possession of a knife when they first made contact with him. And they were giving him orders. There were two officers, and they even attempted to tase him, but the tasing did not work. I can see him fighting with the officers in the second video. And I think that's really important, because we call the collective knowledge of the officers, in other words, their education, training, and experience, including up and through the moments of the encounter with every individual, is extremely important, because it forms the opinion as to how they're going to handle the law enforcement contact. The next thing is the time compression, because when, at least for the first video, Linda, it was a video that lasted about 7 seconds from the moment he breaks away from the officers and moves around the front of the car, going to his waistband twice, to the moment of the first shot fired. It was only 7 seconds. Okay, so you get about a 15-second video, but 7 important seconds. Now, the thing that I looked at is from the time he dove into the car while he's being restrained, the guy's pulling his shirt, the officer's pulling his shirt, to the time the first shot was fired is 1 second. So that officer had only 1 second to make a deadly force decision.
But isn't it interesting that the media have all the time in the world to backseat drive, to second guess.
Armchair quarterback, 20-20 hindsight.
All of it.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how many people, probably not a lot of people, but a few people can relate. Let's just say that you're in a bar in the evening and somebody walks up and sucker punches you. You're totally not expecting it. And a fight ensues. I mean, those events go down so fast that it just seems like, you know, just a split second. And that's how it is for officers. And I don't think that the public really understands that whole dynamic. And you just brought it up about 7 seconds, 1 second. It takes no time for these things to go down. And your mind has to process what's happening, the threat to you, the not just to you, but to people around in the vicinity. Everything has to happen in your mind in milliseconds. And then you have people second guessing you for years after. Right. It's got to be extremely, extremely frustrating as an officer to be out there in these times, to have to deal with that, to have gone through all of the training and all of the decision-making learning that will help you in situations like this.
Right.
And then a situation happens and you've got to make a decision.
You know, in this case, I can see a number of issues, what we call issues of contribution, you know, but not for. So, you know, but, and I haven't made any determinations at all yet. We are just at the very beginning of this investigation. But, you know, for Jacob Blake, but not for a number of things, he would be alive today. Would you not agree? Right? Because, but not for.
Well, I think he is alive.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You know, I beg your pardon. No, it is. And I think his dad reported recently that he may be paralyzed. Let's wait till the medical stuff comes out. But, you know, but not for him getting involved in a domestic violence situation, not his first. If he had a weapon, but not for the presence of a knife or a weapon, but not for his resistance, even after getting tased, but not for his repeated refusals to follow orders and commands, to stop resisting, to submit to custody, to maybe even get on the ground or whatever officers are yelling
at that
time. Which,
by the way, is required of people.
That's right. It is a legal requirement that they comply. Even if they don't agree with the detention or the arrest, it is a legal requirement that people obey. And so there are so many different issues of contribution. The next thing is going back, and I appreciate you mentioning that, is what we call human factors, such as action, reaction, perception, lag time. So the officer has 1 second to make that life death determination. And they are all trained, and of course, I've done a lot of this research myself, and it's been televised on numerous big, I mean, you can Google it, go to CNN, Google Dr. Ron Martinelli, and go to NBC and Google Dr. Ron Martinelli and his experiments, and they're going to show you that a person, a subject who is armed, can access a concealed weapon and turn 180 degrees and shoot and fire and kill an officer in 25 hundredths of a second. But it takes over a second for the officer to realize the life threat, decide what he's going to do, and then do it, right? Take one of five different responses to a life threat. In this case, the officer chose to apply deadly force. But he's always behind the curve. Every single time they're behind the curve. Hey, did you ever play that game when you were a kid with your sisters where you put your hand out and the person, you know, and your sibling puts their hand above your hand, and then the object of the game is not to get your hand hit,
right,
you know, by your sibling or your friend? You know, you lose every time, don't
sure.
you? And the reason is because they only have one act, and that is just to hit your hand. But you have to watch. And you have to judge the speed, and you've got to respond. That's three different things. So they only have one thing to do, and that's hit your hand. And they know when they're going to do it, and you don't know when they're going to do it. You see what I'm talking about?
Well, and the only thing that you can do in that game is anticipate
right.
when they're going to do it. And I guess it could kind of be the same thing with officers. But yeah, we need to wait till the facts come in. But the point being that it took another event like that where somebody, listen, the officers didn't go look for this guy. They were called. Right. They were called because he was doing something
That's
wrong. And they were called to a bad situation, and it turned into a worse situation because of the suspect's actions and failure to comply.
And then don't forget the temperament of the community. And this is why, and Linda, I go back to an article that you wrote and conversations we've had where, you know, you came up with, I think, a very valid theory about the dysfunctional politicians are our dysfunctional parents.
Absolutely.
And we mimic what they do, right? So when they're spouting off and throwing these officers under the bus like the governor of Wisconsin did and like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did. And Kamala Harris should know better because she was a former prosecutor and a state attorney general in California. She should know better. But what they're doing is they throw the officers under the bus without any due process, without any investigation, to placate the public. And instead of placating the public, they further enrage the public.
Well, I think that is the desire at this time before the election, is that is what they want to do. And it doesn't do our country any good. It doesn't do anybody any good. And my heart breaks for all of those businesses. I watched that car dealership go up in flames. Somebody's life, you know, went along with that.
Oh, everything. They
sure.
probably poured everything to that business. And here's an irony that I pointed out in my Truth Beyond the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police. That dealership had posted signs supported of Black Lives Matter all around that dealership. And what these ignorant people don't understand, and they should probably read my book, is that this thing that is happening in the United States has absolutely nothing to do with Black lives, okay? The Black Lives Matter movement has absolutely nothing to do with Black lives. And it's unfortunate that the car dealership learned that a little bit too late.
I agree.
Because they burned it to the ground.
Well, at that and a number of other places. So the unrest continues in our country, and the politicians refuse to bring in those who they have there that are there for this express purpose of helping in domestic situations like this, which would be the National Guard.
Right.
They have them in Oregon, they have them in Washington, and they're not using them.
Well, you know, and in Wisconsin, the governor called out like 100 National Guard people. Let me tell you something. You need about 500 National Guard people there. You need to make a serious statement. And when you send out a paltry number, like 100 National Guard people, what you do is you further encourage the radical Marxists and anarchists and neo-socialists to completely destroy your cities.
And you also risk those people's lives. You risk citizens' lives. You risk National Guardsmen's lives. So if you're going to do it, use overwhelming force.
Absolutely. And it has to be done professionally, but it has to be overwhelming. And again, we need to sit back. We need to take a deep breath. And we need to have a studied forensic response instead of emotional response to these type of issues. How about our last cup of coffee?
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
I want to talk about the post office for a minute. There's this debate raging between the Democrats and Republicans, amongst many other debates, about the Postal Service now that we have an election coming up. So nobody has worried so much about the Postal Service being a really poorly run organization for a very long time, losing billions of dollars. But now that all of a sudden they're worried that the post office is not going to deliver the mail properly for the election.
Well, wait a minute. They haven't been delivering the mail properly as long as I've been alive.
Well, this is true. And because of that, President Trump appointed a new postmaster general, Louis DeJoy, to run the post office and to fix some of these problems within the post office. Well, if you've ever tried to fix anything, a lot of times, it's kind of like when I clean the house, it gets worse before it gets better, you know, because I kind of tear everything apart and then I put it back together.
Well, I've noticed that.
I think that is kind of what Mr. DeJoy is doing. In the meantime, we have this interesting thing between Republicans and Democrats. So on the Republican side, they do not want mail-in ballots to be sent to every person, whether they're dead or alive, and whether they have registered to vote, and all of these different instances where they're going to send just everybody a ballot in the mail. You have no idea who's going to fill out that ballot. You have no idea who's going to vote and how many times they're going to vote. And it goes back to that joke where, you know, I have 7 ballots here. Do I send them in all at once or do I stagger them? Well, I mean, that's really what I see is going to happen. The other thing that the Republicans are very concerned about is that they have put an R on the back of the envelope and a D. So anybody in the Postal Service is going to know if you're a Republican or a Democrat, and they can throw out your votes if they choose to.
You know, I think that's a huge issue personally.
Oh, I think it's terrible.
I couldn't even believe that when I heard that, but it's absolutely true.
Right. Republicans have always been the party that wants in-person voting or absentee ballot voting.
And accountability.
And accountability. They want you to have to show identification, and just as we do in Texas. The Democrats are the party that have fought every effort to show identification to vote, and who just really back anybody voting. They've been signing up illegals already. They have been signing up, and people have been charged and convicted with this just in this particular election.
Are you kidding? Numerous times.
Where they have been signing people up and filling the ballot out for them,
right,
and having them sign their name.
Correct.
I mean, that is illegal. That is what the Republicans are trying to prevent. So, you know, we've got this war of two worlds here. We've got Nancy Pelosi saying that President Trump is trying to suppress the vote. And I just think that's a despicable thing to say. The postmaster has come out and said that the post office will handle the votes if states decide to have mail-in elections. They will handle the votes as long as they are, you know, mailed on time. They suggest people mail them early.
Yeah, you know, and let me say that it isn't as if President Trump and the Republican Party is against mail-in voting. They are totally in favor of absentee voting.
Yes, which is mail-in voting.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the reason, and the difference between the standard mail-in voting and the absentee voting is that there is a vetting process to use the absentee ballot. You have to previously have provided correct identification, photo ID, and proven that you do have a residence that is a voting residence. You're the person of that residence that's voting in that precinct, whatever you want to call it, that neighborhood, that community, that city, that precinct. And with the other kind of voting, just the mail-in voting, there are none of those assurances, backup systems, accountability. There is no transparency. And because of that, a significant amount of fraud.
Yes. And I think the Republicans are very, very right to be concerned about that. So the argument is on the Republican side that the Democrats are trying to steal the election, and I would agree with that, that they are trying to steal the election by having this mail-in voting where anybody can vote numerous times and nobody knows who really voted. And the Democratic side, which says that the Republicans are trying to suppress people's votes and not let them vote, and that is unethical. So we have this whole back and forth going on. In the meantime, President Trump hired this new Postmaster General in order to solve these problems, these continuing ages-long problems with the post office where they're losing billions of dollars and it's not run efficiently. And that is what he's trying to do. So because this person is a conservative, he has donated money to the Republican Party, the Democrats are complaining that he must then be trying to throw the election for Trump. Now, take that with how many people on the other side are serious donors to the Democratic Party, and they have no problem with that whatsoever. So the hypocrisy is crazy here. Let the man do his job, and he's not going to have the power to change people's votes or change people's ballots. He's not going to see them and let the process go. I don't believe in the mail-in voting,
neither
period. Only the absentee ballot voting.
You know, I feel so sorry for this poor guy in taking the position, because I had an administrative position once where I was brought in to fix this complete debacle of this police academy at this community college. And, I was there as an interim just to go in and fix it. And I got to tell you, it was the worst job I ever had. There was corruption. There was mismanagement. There was negligence. I mean, from the top to the bottom. And it was extremely hard. And I got so much pushback in trying to fix it. Now, all the law enforcement agencies that fed the police academy and fed the community college were, 2,000% in front of me. As a matter of fact, they were the ones responsible for bringing me in. But I'll tell you what, I told you this before, I had to fight the union, the California Teachers Association. I had to fight everybody just to do the right thing. I mean, come on, you would think altruistically, naively, that if you have success in other parts of your career, you're going to have success doing something like that. It was a huge wake-up call for me, okay? Because I remember what I told you what the union president said. He goes, I'm going to be here longer than you. And he was absolutely right. But I was there. I knew I was only there for an interim position. But he was right. And it went right back to the, after I fixed it, it went right back to the way it was after I left. So you're 100% right. You know, the Republican Party, Donald Trump and his cabinet are not trying to fix the election. What they're trying to do is bring forward some accountability measures so that Americans who have the right to vote can vote. And it's a vetted vote that means something.
Yes. Well, I want to change subjects real quick because I want to go back to the Republican convention. One of the speeches I was most looking forward to just did not fail to inspire, and that was Melania Trump's speech. Melania Trump has English is her second language. It is not her first language.
And by the way, she speaks five languages.
Oh.
Four other languages besides English.
So she has a second, third, fourth, and fifth language.
Well, and not very much different than other Europeans that we're familiar with that usually speak at least three languages.
Well, I just think that she is the most elegant first lady we have ever had. And I think that she is absolutely graceful and beautiful. And she seems to be very much a family woman. She talked about the tragedy of COVID and the loss of lives. She talked about drug addiction. She talked about children all over the world and how we need to really take care of our future for them. And she talked about a lot of uplifting things. And she said that they really were looking forward to serving America for another 4 years. And it was a long speech, and it was a good speech. She did a lot of, I will say that she did a lot of reading, the teleprompter,
because English is not her primary language.
Yes, exactly.
Language. Okay.
But she just is so elegant and graceful. And the media immediately came out afterward, and they criticized her speech. They criticized her clothing. They criticized her rose garden. And I just don't understand the vitriol that these people have. They idolized Michelle Obama. Michelle Obama is also a beautiful woman. Personally, I don't think the two compare. They do compare. They absolutely do compare. They both were well-dressed, and they both could speak, and they both, talked about things that were uplifting. However, Melania Trump is never vicious in her speaking, and Michelle Obama at times was. This was a beautiful speech by Melania. You can't criticize it in any way, yet they do. And I just find that really sad and very frustrating.
Well, first of all, I'm like probably most men in America, I'm absolutely mesmerized by her. I think she is drop dead gorgeous. But you know me, I love intelligent, independent women, okay?
And she is one.
And I'm looking across the table at one
thank you.
Okay? But she's extremely intelligent, and she's articulate. And as a matter of fact, she's far more articulate than most American, people that would be politicians that would be, speaking in her place. But that being said, I thought, as you did, that she was the first person to really articulate the tragedies of the pandemic of COVID. I respected her so much for talking about American heroes, and not just our military and our first responders and law enforcement, but our families. And, you know, and I think she said it, it was just a wonderful sentiment. And she said, you know, when these people walk out the door, the wife or the husband and the family members never know if they're going to come back that night. You know, and it's so true. And the public just kind of ignores that. But you and I know, having been in the business for many years, we know that that's a, you know, a definite reality. But she gave thanks to the medical professionals and the teachers that are working on the front lines.
Yes.
Everybody that has contributed. And she shared the sadness and tragedy, not only of people who have lost loved ones over this pandemic, but the businesses that have been ruined, you know, the hard times, the hard economic times. But I also enjoyed her speech as being uplifting.
Yes.
And being, you know, self-assuring. And I love the admiration that she has for her husband, but for the reasons that she stated that she admires Donald Trump. And, you know, people like us who support the President of the United States, we have absolutely zero doubt of his love and his focus, exhaustive focus on the United States and the American people and wanting us to succeed.
Well, and I believe that with all my heart. I believe that his heart is absolutely in the right place. He's bombastic. He tweets a lot. But he absolutely does everything that he can do for the American people. And, you know, I cannot say that about Joe Biden. There are so many things that I could say right now to you about monies that were taken from China, monies for his family, monies that were taken from other countries in many, many different instances, in many ways. He lined his and his family's and his friends' pockets, and that's how he used his office. President Trump has used his office to help the American people, not to line his own pockets. In fact, he's making less money by far than he was as a private businessman. But he loves America, and I truly believe that. And you can see that in Melania. You don't see raw political desire in her. You see a woman who cares about her family, who cares about her husband, and who cares about America. And she is a person who became a citizen. She was not born here. And she says it was one of her proudest days in her life.
Well, you know, as soon as she gave her speech, already the media pundits,
yes,
and those on the left, they started criticizing her. They criticized her accent. They criticized her outfit. And, you know, even one of the CNN people said it was like a Seinfeld episode. It was a speech about nothing. Well, if you feel it was a speech about nothing, you were not listening. That's number one. Number two, Melania Trump is not a politician. She is not a politician. Michelle Obama, she's a politician. Kamala Harris, she's a politician. Melania Trump is First Lady of the United States. She is a businesswoman.
In her own right.
In her own right, extremely successful. She is a multilingual expert, because anybody that can speak five different languages with the fluency that Melania Trump speaks needs to be respected. She is a mother. And that came across on numerous occasions, talking about children. To me, the theme had a lot to do with children, including her own child, her travels to other countries and seeing other children and seeing the challenges and the tragedies that other children have to go through, and thinking about the future for her own child. So I found so much credibility in what she was saying, and her speech resonated with me. It did not resonate, you know, and I believe that Michelle Obama is an articulate woman. She's an attorney. She better be an articulate woman. But I will tell you, when you compare a politician to Melania Trump, she takes a second seat to nobody. And God bless her for having the courage. You know, when everybody is knocking you down, in the media and, you know, and also in the news media and social media, for her to step forward courageously and give a speech like that. It was far from nothing. It was an absolute definite speech of substance.
And I think that the United States could use much more Melania Trump.
I absolutely agree. Well, Linda, why don't you tell people how our listeners and followers can continue to follow us on America Out Loud?
Well, you just have to go to AmericaOutLoud.com and you can find all of our shows there, or you can listen live Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and just extrapolate that to wherever you are in the world. And you can also listen to us on podcasts and all of the major podcasts, iHeart, Stitcher, and so forth. You can find us there. But in addition, Ron, we have your book on the bookstore, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, is on the America Out Loud bookstore, along with many other authors there who have great and interesting books. Just pop us an email and we'll be happy to sign that book for you too.
And you can get a hold of me and order that book at dronmartinelli.com, dronmartinelli.com. And Linda, can I give a little plug to my
absolutely
Wade Justice Texas
today
Rangers
is, today
series?
Today is a banner day for us. Dr. Ron's books went live on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all of the major ways that you can buy books, and this is his Wade Justice brand new fiction series.
Yeah, detective thriller about a contemporary retired Texas Ranger involved in national and international intrigue and investigations. And by the way, speaking of personalized books and authored autographed books by me, all you have to do is go to our beautiful new site, and that is Wade Justice, and Justice is spelled J-U-S-T-U-S. So wadejustice.com, and I'll be more than happy to personalize a book in your name and also autograph it. But you can also go to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, like Linda said, and all the normal book locations, and pretty soon we'll have our ebooks out as well.
Yep. Well, I want to say congratulations to you and also to America Out Loud, because they are celebrating their four-year anniversary, and just they're growing in leaps and bounds, the best station on the radio.